we just talk? Can we just talk about?
Welcome back to the Tuesday Crew here on WRSU 88.7 FM or WRSU.org. My name is Jack Vasea. Mogul Lubchick is in studio. Alec, forgive me, I forgot what your last name is. Can you remind me again real quick?
It's Krauthammel.
Krauthammel, sorry. Alec Krauthammel there in New Brunswick as well for our famed Can We Just Talk segment. And I think this
Sorry, Jack, before you get into it, I just want to inform you, Alec, that Jack and I and our friend John, who is usually with us, we have had some very spirited discussions. I don't think we'll have any slander of pools tonight or jokes about pools tonight because John's not with us. But we've had some spirited discussions about New Jersey and Club Penguin in particular.
That sounds like a great time.
It's been everything from pools to the geography of New Jersey to Club Penguin, as Mo just said.
But and a lot more pools in between.
I'm going to keep things today.
For context, John builds pools, so we like to make fun of him.
I think I do remember I shadowed, I want to say it was a couple weeks ago, and I do remember that. I remember hearing something about that.
John builds pools and therefore hates pools. So if you want a pool, John Hartnett will gladly build you your pool.
I work at a pool, so I lifeguard at a town pool, so I have a certain affinity towards pools.
All right, so Jack, why don't you get into what you want to get into?
Yes, so I'm going to keep things in the world of college today. Barstool Sports, I'm pretty sure everyone knows Barstool. Pretty well-known company that targets kids our age for their content that they make. And every now and then they come out with these maps or rankings that rank various things, whether it be best bar universities or best home environments or, you know, best whatever, you know what I mean? So today they came out with this map that was about the best school per state. Now, I don't think you can get any more vague on best than what Barstool did. Now, I sent it to Mo on Instagram.
We're looking at it now. What is this based on?
Great question. So it says data provided by the American Survey Service. Now, I don't know what that is.
Laptop? I'm gonna look into the American Survey Service.
The point is, just go around the map here. Like, so the quote-unquote best school in California is USF. The best school in New Jersey
USF,
is St. Peter's.
University of San Francisco.
No, I understand.
The best school in New Jersey is St. Peter's.
I think
the best school in Indiana is Purdue, which is a little more believable. The best school in Massachusetts is UMass. For people who don't know about the universities that are in Massachusetts, one of them is Harvard. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's a pretty good school from what I heard. But UMass is better. UMass is better, apparently. St. Peter's is better than Rutgers, Seton Hall, especially, and Monmouth, if you want to throw Monmouth in there. I mean, I just want to have a discussion about this.
Texas A&M being the top in Texas. It's interesting.
I just got no idea what's going on here. It's like the vagueness of like this is just like unreal. And then even in Pennsylvania, like you got Pitt in a state where there's Penn State. So if we're going off like best school and you're going off like what I think is the definition of best school is probably the best academics, right? I would go on a limb, and I know this is a very risky take to be having. It's a very hot take, but I don't think UMass is the best academic school in Massachusetts. I'm sorry, that's a hot take, but
and it is definitely not the best athletic school.
Yeah. So
by the way, I'm just gonna interject for a second. I Googled American Survey Service. I don't think the American Survey Service exists.
We'll see. What I've,
are you serious?
What I've learned
or sorry,
on,
the American Survey, I think, is the Census Bureau?
I think what I've learned in my time of being on the internet, what Barstool likes to do a lot of the time is they like to make these, like, you know, fake polls to, like, you know, get reactions like exactly like what we're doing right now. And then if you look at,
Dave,
you know,
Fortnoy.
If you look at, you know, the initials of the name of the survey service, if you want to put those together.
I see.
Yeah.
A little...
Alec, you're a next-level thinker.
Maybe a little reference to where Dave Portnoy got that from, if you catch my drift.
Yeah, I've fallen for those kinds of things a few times, and I've learned.
Yeah, I'm gonna look at.
It provides us with talking points for Can We Just Talk? I'll give you that.
It does, and it gets clicks. I mean, it's got 17,000 likes in 3 hours.
Yeah,
you know, I don't have 17,000 likes on my entire Instagram in 8 years.
Yeah,
sorry, 10 years.
You know, some of it's legit, and I think that's part of the mind games that they're playing. You got to make some of it legit, like,
yeah,
I don't know, like Nebraska in Nebraska, or like, you know, Florida in Florida. I know Florida's kind of got a reputation, University of Florida, like, you know, they got a good sports team. They also are a very good academic institution.
Yep.
You know, Ohio State in Ohio, like, you know, yep. there's Wisconsin and Wisconsin. So like there's some like verifiable ones, but then like you get to Massachusetts and it's like kind of what in the world. So, and then like, yeah, Murray State in Kentucky, like, you know, I love John Moran, but
yeah, you got to make it believable enough that some people will fall for it, but enough like absurdity, yeah, that it's like,
wait, that it'll get clicks.
Yeah.
Like if I didn't have a Can We Just Talk segment today, I probably wouldn't even bat a second eye at it. But since we have a Can We Just Talk segment, I had to make a comment,
yeah,
on it.
Also,
you know?
Syracuse being the best school in New York.
Right. Yeah, like, I have no idea. And then, like, UNC for North Carolina. UNC is a great school, but I think Duke's better.
Yeah.
So,
not
as egregious as Massachusetts. I'm sorry I keep mentioning that, but.
Yeah, it's... I've seen far too many of those. I don't know if you guys know of Big Game Boomer. He likes to do a lot of those similar kinds of posts, but on college football mostly. I definitely think that, you know, some of it is like legitimate, like what the guy thinks is like best or whatever. But I think some of it is used to like rile up fan bases to like get attention too.
Oh, definitely.
I feel like Rutgers is always the victim of that stuff, though.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
I mean?
They always have like other New Jersey schools.
Yeah, Barstool
Rutgers
likes to shade Rutgers because when they're not picking St. Peter's, they're picking our other cross-state rival, Seton Hall.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Rutgers being like the main, I mean, I know there's Princeton and all that, but Rutgers is like, when you think of New Jersey colleges, you think Rutgers for a good amount of people. So it is
the state university after all.
It is indeed the state university. So, you know, I definitely think we get some kind of, you know, I think we get some, what's the right word that I'm thinking of here?
I don't know.
Negative attention for that.
I'm trying to find another example of Barstool Sports in these lists, but
I was looking for an example as well.
They're out there for sure.
Yeah, I think they use the American Survey Service name a lot. That's the one that I've seen a lot too.
I'm gonna be looking at that now. Every time they put out one of these, they like to do like the bars and stuff.
I typed in American Survey Service and hit space, and it suggested American Survey Service Barstool.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that means that it's doing its job of getting a lot of people to, you know, to see like who's giving this stuff.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that to my attention because I'll be honest, I fell for it.
Yeah, I think everyone's fallen for it at least a few times. I know I have.
Yeah, that's clever, actually. You know, Barstool comes up with some good stuff. I mean, I will say, you know, I enjoy Rutgers Barstool a little more than, you know, Barstool, you know, the main. But
I'll say this, Rutgers Barstool just has, like, they own Seton Hall's Barstool.
I will say, actually, shout out to my friend Shelly, who is one of the admins of Rutgers Barstool. They do a great job.
I think I had a class with her one time, and that was how I found out, like, wait, I know someone who runs Rutgers Barstool.
Yeah, so, like, I know her since high school. You know, she's very good friends with my girl. She used to be very good friends with my girlfriend. Like, so shout out to Shelly and all the other admins of Rutgers Barstool. Doing a great job.
Definitely.
Yeah, they, I think my favorite thing that they put out was, shortly after the Jersey Mike's Arena name change, Rutgers Barstool was selling a shirt with a trapezoid on it that said "Still the Rack."
Yeah, that was very popular in the initial days of like the name change.
That and the Down Goes Number One shirt after the Purdue game.
Yeah,
that was a Ron Harper Jr. thing. That wasn't. Yes, I don't think that was Barstool.
That was his own line. I actually have the sweatshirt. It's a great sweatshirt.
The Down Goes Number One.
I have the shirt.
I do not, but when I first, I wish I did.
When I first like started wearing it, I noticed like a little like spot of like a little darker spot. I was like, is it already stained? But then I realized that like even included the shadow of like him leaving the ground on the sweatshirt too.
Wow.
Very nice attention to detail.
That is
I gotta give it to Ron Harper Jr. And I don't want to get too far off beaten track with this Can We Just Talk segment, but he did a great job with his shirts and his marketing, because literally, like Alec, you can attest, the day after he hit that shot against Purdue, he had that shirt available.
Oh yeah. Like I remember, like,
and then
a day
also
or two
when he hit the shot against Indiana, the day after he had that Who's Your Daddy shirt.
They had that ready.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive by his people.
Yeah, like a day or two after the Purdue game, I texted my dad like, hey, I know what I want for Christmas.
Nice.
It was just such an iconic moment. It was like, I mean, credit to him, because that's what you got to do. Like, you got to capitalize on the moment. He understands it.
Yeah, he knows how to market.
Yeah, I will say, I might have also bought it. If he had sold a T-shirt with him making that basket gesture, I might have bought that too.
Yeah, definitely. I would have bought that instantly.
Oh, and it was also funny seeing Indiana Twitter freak out about that.
Yeah. I mean, Rutgers just owns Indiana and most sports.
Yeah.
Which is insane, because a couple years ago, they were kind of like campaigning for Rutgers to be out of the Big Ten.
They had that one infamous article of whether Rutgers should be actually a part of the Big Ten or not.
Really? I don't think I saw that.
It was like one of the, like, you know how we have like certain fan sites like On the Banks, of course. Like, I think it was something like one of theirs.
Yeah. Now I heard the guy who runs the On the Banks social media, especially, is kind of a loser.
Oh yeah, yeah, huge loser for sure.
Man, who would ever do that? Yeah,
couldn't even make it into the studio in person.
Yeah, he does a really bad job with the socials. I can't lie, but
Four-game winning streak, only at number three. Boom. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you gotta balance. There's more than just basketball at our school.
All right.
That's true.
But going back to what we were talking about, which was Ron Harper Jr.'s absolute ponage of the teams that he beat.
I guess we're transitioning. Can we just talk over to that now? I mean, I guess it's like,
Jack, if there's one thing we're really bad at, it's staying on topic. And can we just talk?
Well, yeah. Also, it's the summer, and we had this discussion last week, so it's hard to stick on one conversation when, you know, all the sports are kind of in their summer recess.
Yeah, there's only so much baseball we can talk about, which we will get to soon.
Yeah, for sure. I know Mo's chomping at the bits to get to baseball talk, but
my Mets, they're doing great.
Yeah, Alec, you got a baseball team?
Oh yeah, big Yankees guy.
All right.
Okay.
All right. We'll get back to that, but you know, we like you mentioned, Jack, it's the summer, so the summer is the time to talk about you know, Club Penguin and guys named Gino making me giving people ammonia poisoning, and things like that. You know, it's just time to kick back and relax and just, you know, have a good time, and I think we're pretty good at that.
Well, I guess for this Can We Just Talk segment, I'll ask, how's your 4th of July weekend shaping up here?
Ooh, that's a good question. Alec, you want to kick this one off?
Yeah. See, I think I hinted this before. I also work at a pool. I lifeguard, so I'm going to be doing a lot of that.
A lot of pools.
Oh yeah.
Lots of pools.
If it's a nice weekend, then I'm sure the pool's going to be busy.
Jack, we got to set him up with John and see how that goes.
Alec, do you have like a personal vendetta against pools?
See, I guess the extent to which my personal vendetta against pools goes to the people that go to the pool. Kind of like how John has a vendetta against pools and he builds pools, and I have a vendetta against people who go to pools and I'm supposed to watch those people. That's kind of my thing.
Fair.
So it's like, you know, when I go to the pool, it's like there better be no one here.
I gotcha.
Yeah, don't make me have to do stuff.
I worked at a Dick's Sporting Goods for a long time, so I can understand that with respect to the customers, because it can get insane when, you know, there's too many customers like at your at your section.
Yeah,
so
of course 4th of July is always that day that there's a ton of people. We used to have a 4th of July party every year, but in the past couple of years it hasn't happened because of, you know, a little thing that's been going on for the past couple of years. But
what? I didn't hear about anything.
It's just a small thing, you know. Just some little sickness going around the past couple of years.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah.
I think I may have heard one or two things about that now that you mention it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jack, what are you doing for the 4th?
I'm going away tomorrow. I'm going down the shore for a little bit. Nice. And you know, I'll occupy a little bit of my weekend. I'll be back later in the weekend, and you know, we'll see what happens after that. Should be fun. I mean, as Alex said, there's a very small virus that has gotten in the way of a lot of 4th of July plans the past couple of years. So it'll be good to have one that's, you know, not hindered by COVID, if you want to say that. So
I'm hoping to be right there with you.
What's your go-to beach?
Go-to beach? Well, I'm from Monmouth County. I don't know where you're from, Alec, but I always gravitate towards like the Belmars, the Asbury's, even Point Pleasant, like some that are like pretty close driving distance for me.
Staying comfortably in Central Jersey, I see.
Comfortably, yes. I've never been an LBI guy just because it hasn't been close enough for me. Like I said, the Belmars, Point Pleasant, Asbury parts are a lot closer. So,
I am
a big fan of Cape May though, down south.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big LBI guy because, you know, my grandparents have a house down there, so that's where I've been going since I was a kid.
Where are you from?
I'm from Hillsborough, so it's like 25 minutes or so from here.
All right.
Since Somerset County, it's pretty much in the middle of, like, in between, if you guys know where Bridgewater is and Princeton.
Sure.
So it's like 20
minutes.
Yeah, I
know where Hillsborough is.
Yeah, so not too far from here.
That's not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Yeah. Personally, I actually love July 4th the last few years, you know, aside from that 1 year ruined by that little virus. So as I think Jack knows, I am an EMT and I ride with my town's local volunteer ambulance corps. And we actually, so every year we have a huge showing for our town's 4th of July parade. You know, some of our retired members and just active members also come with their families. So we
That's
march
cool.
in the town's parade. We bring all the ambulances out. We also just got a gator this year, so we're going to drive that around. I'm actually hoping to get to drive one of the ambulances in the parade this year. I gotta, you know, convince the chief to let me. And then we have a massive barbecue at our station. You know, we shut down the street last year. We had like bouncy houses and stuff like that. And then there's the late night barbecue. We just, you know, grill up all the leftovers and just chill. So I'm looking forward to a very, you know, very enjoyable July 4th, and then actually, like a week later, I'm actually going down to Florida for a couple of days to visit my grandparents, so that'll be fun as well.
Where in Florida, Mo?
Boca Raton. My
nice.
Grandparents, they have a house down there, so my sister and I are going to go down there for a couple of days and visit. I actually will be missing an episode of Crew for that, because I will be sitting in Newark Airport.
Our glorious second-in-command, Dylan Allen, is currently missing today's crew for being in Florida. So I guess it's your turn to return the favor for him.
Yeah, I haven't missed a crew in a couple of weeks. So And meanwhile, I believe John Hartnett is at the Met game right now. See how the Mets are doing right now.
How are they doing?
I'm working on it right now. They are down 4-0 in the top of the first.
Oh, nice.
Ouch. So I do believe that our dear pool man with the luscious locks, John Hartnett, is there. Got to keep his hair because Igor Shesterkin couldn't
get
a shutout in game 5 or 6. So he got to keep his hair. For those who don't recall,
get John on the line.
There was
get him on.
Yeah,
get John on the line. We'll get a live report from Citi Field right now.
Yeah, let me. I can't. I don't have his number in the station phone. Let me see if I can get him on the horn here.
Fair enough, but yeah. I mean, it's that time of year. I mean, we work these sports all year. And, you know, right now it's kind of a downtime. I mean, we could always talk Rutgers basketball, could always talk You know, different rocker sports, but yeah, I mean, Mo, if you're not able to get John on the line, I'll offer up.
Hold on, I got him.
You got him, okay.
John, you're on speaker on the air. How's the game?
It's 4-0, and it's about top of the first. I'm very upset. I wish it was not 4-0 at the top of the first. I wish it was tied. That's okay. We got Cookie in the mound. He did good. The bats are waking up. I don't know. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I do apologize. We kind of missed a little bit of that because I forgot I turned my mic off. But, you know, John, what's the... You enjoying the game so far, even though we're losing?
100%. I mean, because I can barely hear you guys. So I'm going to step out, like, you know, really quick. But
Nah, it's all good. It's all good.
Buck at the helm, you know, and Buck we trust, right? I mean... I'm not worried. We got Buck. I think we'll be alright. One inning at a time.
One inning at a time. We'll let you get back to enjoying the game. Thanks for chatting with us, John.
Have a good show, guys.
And this is what happens on the Tuesday crew. I apologize if you couldn't really hear what he was saying. I had my phone volume a little too low and I forgot to turn my mic back on. So wonderful radio we were producing. Right there.
Yes. I guess real quick before we finish up this Can We Just Talk segment, I want to open up. I guess we talked about Rutgers basketball. So, you know, Rutgers football starts up in a couple weeks. So it should be fun to see how they do this year. Me personally, if you ask me to give a prediction on how they're going to do this year, I think it's either going to be 5-7, just like they were last year, or 4-8. So I'm not seeing any major improvement from Rutgers football, mainly because of the schedule that they play. It's very brutal with all the teams they play. But you know, but offering up, especially Alex, since I haven't heard your opinion on Rutgers football, how are you feeling about the team this year?
I mean, I'm definitely feeling pretty optimistic. I think that they can make the 5 or 6 win mark, but I mean that schedule is going to be pretty difficult, much more than last year. I don't think we're going to see as much Gavin as people would like to or will think. I think in my opinion, we're going to see Noah start against up in Boston. And then I think Wagner is going to be Gavin Wimsatt's going to go full Jonathan Lewis on the Wagner Seahawks. And then I think we're going to see more Noah Vedrill than people will think. But I think they could make 6 wins, but I think it's more likely they'll get 5.
Ooh, I don't know how the fan base will like it if that comes to fruition, Alec, because you know there's a guy waiting in the wings that we all want to see, and he had some flashes last year, albeit like when I mean flashes, it was like you know 2 plays where he got a first down and like he came in for like 1 other play. So I think fans will get anxious, especially if the losses start piling up. And unfortunately, I think they are going to pile up. Now, Mo, before I let you go, I just want to run down the schedule real quick. They start off at Boston College. They play at home against Wagner in the opener. And then they play at Temple. Now, last year, it was 2 home games in non-conference, 1 road game. This year, it's the opposite. 2 road games and 1 home game. So I wouldn't be surprised if they drop one of the one of these road games versus what they did last year when they won all 3. And then it really gets going. They play Iowa at home. Then they play at Ohio State. That's a bookend win. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Then they play at home against Nebraska, which, to note, is a night game. It's Friday on the set, October 7th. It's going to be a blackout game. It's the first blackout game that I can remember. So there should be a lot of fun for the student body for sure.
I think the last one was that Maryland game in 2017, at least that I can remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, it was a fun one.
So no one that's in school now was there, you know, so it should be fun.
And hopefully we won't lose 78-0 this time.
Yeah. It's very hard to not improve on that.
Can you just do me a favor, Alec? Just 1 second. Can you just see that hockey up in the top corner that says 52-0? Just click that for me.
52-0.
I believe that is from that night when Rutgers was down at one point 52-0. Can I just point out about that game? I've looked into the stats. They went for 2 when they were already up. I think it was 27-0.
Yeah, they did.
And they went for two. My sister was at that game. They went for two up 27-0. Like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, why? I mean, I get you want to, like, you know, it's already a blowout. You want to
have some fun.
Team, have some fun. Yeah, but it's like, why?
And that was in, like, the second quarter, by the way.
They didn't get a first down until, like, 6 minutes to go in the entire game. That was
Yeah, it was rough. A little sad. Yeah, sorry, Jack. You were saying?
Yeah, well, let me just go over what think the schedule, if I'm going off a rip here on June 28th. I think they win at Wagner, or not at Wagner, at Boston College. They win against Wagner, 2-0. Then they beat Temple. I do, even though I think that they could lose one of the non-conference games, I think they get all three. Then they lose to Iowa at home. Then they'll lose to Ohio State. I think something's in the water on the 7th. They'll win against Nebraska. So going into their bye, they will be 4-2. Then they'll come off that. They'll lose to Indiana. They'll lose at Minnesota. They'll lose against Indiana. They'll win at Minnesota because it seems they win all their home games or all their road games. Sorry, like Minnesota. So they'll go win in Minnesota. Then they'll lose to Michigan. Then they'll lose to Michigan State. Then they'll lose to Penn State. Then they'll lose to Maryland, and I'll be 5-7 on the year. I really do think they'll be 5-7 at the end of this year.
That's an interesting take on it. I can't say I disagree with it. You know, especially the Big Ten. You know, not the strongest college football conference, but you know, some pretty good teams in there. You know, Ohio State, you know, a very good team, you know, perennially an NFL factory, essentially. You know, it'll be interesting to see.
Absolutely. And, you know, then there's the Big Ten championship at the end of the season. So we'll see if we're there for sure.
Yeah. I just want to change course a little bit on this. Can we just talk? We'll get into the substantive baseball in a little bit, but I saw this today and I want to get your take on it, Jack. So as we all know, there was a massive brawl between the Angels and the Mariners on Sunday night. And a number of players and coaches, including of course, you know, the Angels interim manager, Phil Nevin, and Jesse Winker of the Mariners were suspended. The funniest thing to me is that the Angels Spanish interpreter, Manny Del Campo, was suspended two games.
That's really
for
funny.
That fight. I saw that today. I was watching a clip from the Rich Eisen show, actually, and they were talking about that, and I was just laughing so hard because it is just, like, you know, coaches and players, I understand, but the interpreter, it's just so funny to me.
And I mean, the crazy thing about, like, this whole thing is that the Angels have so many coaches that are suspended, they have to stretch them out because they wouldn't have enough coaches. They have to like, Nevin's going to serve his suspension, and then one of the other coaches is going to serve his suspension, which, to go to law, not completely off topic, but with Nevin, I think the Angels are playing the Orioles during his suspension, so he's not going to be able to, you know, manage against his son Tyler, who plays for the Orioles right now.
Oh, that would be fun.
Although he had to miss Tyler's MLB debut when the Yankees were playing the Orioles because he got COVID last year, so he just can't seem to get that game against his son.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate. Wow. Jack, what do you think?
About the brawl?
About the brawl and, you know, the translator getting a suspension. I'm sorry to keep harping on it.
The translator getting suspension is pretty hilarious. it reminds me of the Big Ten tournament. When Rutgers basketball was in it this past year and our strength and conditioning coach got thrown out of the game. You know, you don't really see that a lot of the time.
On two separate technicals, too.
Yeah, he got two technicals. And yeah. I was on the other side. I was literally, like, if Mo and Alec probably don't know this, I was literally, like, courtside for that game.
Wow.
I got a media seat that was, like, right there. So, like, I saw, like, Keegan Murray and Ron and all of them, like, it was an incredible experience, but I didn't really hear what the strength and conditioning coach had to say. He was in the Rutgers bench was kind of diagonal to where it was, but it kind of reminds me of that though. Like seeing like this kind of like obscure guy just get thrown out or suspended. Do you know what translator he was for? Like what language?
He was the I believe is a Spanish translator. I saw
Spanish translator. That's hilarious. Man.
He is also a former minor leaguer himself.
Okay.
Wow.
That's what I love about sports. You get these, you know, the crazy moments that you can't write.
Well, like you want to talk about suspensions and fights and moments you can't make up. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Michigan and Wisconsin when you had Juwan Howard slapping an assistant coach.
Man. Yeah, I was,
and getting suspended. I remember sitting in my dorm room last year, just watching that on, like, seeing that on Twitter and going, what the heck?
Yeah, I was watching that game, and I was, you know, just about to change the channel because the game was over. And then next thing I know, I hear the broadcast crew like, wait a minute, what's going on?
And then the game was over.
Yeah, them getting into, like, a little bit of a scrum, and I'm like, wait, what's happening right now?
Yeah.
And then my dad's watching the same thing upstairs, and he's like, are you seeing this right now? And I'm like, yeah, what's going on?
And Rutgers had to play Michigan the next week, you know.
And they were better. And they were, of course, because of course they were.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you know, not just without Juwan Howard, but without
Musa Diabate, I think.
Exactly.
Missed that game.
Yeah, Musa Diabate missed that game.
It was the most predictable game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because they lost like a bunch of their players from the suspension. They lost their head coach from the suspension
for
and
this,
the fight.
For the rest of the season.
And then
season.
They come out and they play like world beaters and they beat us. It was the most frustrating game.
I mean,
like,
at that
Caleb
point,
Houston went off.
At that point, you're angry. Like, you got to win that game when you're angry, you know.
And, I mean, in fairness,
it's
not.
We really dropped the ball in that game.
Definitely.
Like,
but,
we didn't have to have that Indiana heroics game if we won that Michigan game.
Yes.
And I mean, that was very frustrating.
In fairness, it's not like, you know, Michigan had some scrub on their bench coaching. They had Phil Martelli. So, I mean, they were in good hands.
Right.
Some could have argued that maybe they were in better hands, but that's neither here nor there.
All right. You know, I guess John's not here. Someone's got to throw in some unprompted slander somewhere.
I mean, you know,
I
think
guess that'll end.
And
our...
you've got some decently long hair. Yeah, sorry, Jack, I cut you off.
I guess that'll end our wild. Can we just talk? It's always wild here on the Tuesday Crew. So we'll come back and we'll talk about baseball, about like the only sport that's going on right now, excluding Wimbledon. So we'll go back and talk about that. And we'll take our final break.
And welcome back to the Tuesday Crew, back here on WRSU-FM New Brunswick and online at WRSU.org. And after that, as always, all over the place, Can We Just Talk segment, we're going to get back into the sports. Moshe Golubchik, Jack Bisseya, and Alec, I apologize, I forgot your name as well.
That's all right, it's Krauthammel. It's very, very difficult.
We'll get it. I mean, my last name is Golubchik. It's not easy either. But as I promised, we are going to get back into the sports, and we're going to talk a little baseball. So, you know, as we've been saying for the last 3 weeks, the Mets and Yankees, both leading their leagues in terms of record, you know, Pete Alonso leading the National League in terms of runs batted in. It's looking good for New York baseball.
It's looking very good. I you know, I'm a Yankees fan, so I'm over the moon about how we've been so far this season. And it seems like everything is coming up New York so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely things coming up good for New York. I mean, you got the Dodgers closing in on the NL, but you know, things are looking good. As we close out June, we got a couple weeks till the All-Star break. And I mean, we'll go to my Mets first. You know, the Mets are they're doing very well right now. I don't remember their record. The Mets are 47-27, and they hold a 5-game lead over the Atlanta Braves, who are coming off that long winning streak. And We're hearing we might be getting Max Scherzer back in the next week or two, which would be huge, you know, and maybe Jacob deGrom at some point this century. I don't really know. But if the Mets can get Max Scherzer back, you know, they lost Tyler McGill again, unfortunately. But the Mets pitching, even in the absence of Scherzer and deGrom, has been really good, with guys like Carrasco and Walker really filling in the gaps, you know, and David Peterson and, oh, I'm forgetting one, Chris Bassett, you know, really filling in those gaps. And, you know, pitching is obviously, you know, really important to a good baseball team, and the Mets pitching has looked good, you know, and it doesn't always look that good, but, you know, I'm happy with the way it turned out. So, and the Mets bats too, you know, I mentioned Pete Alonso leading the NL in RBIs right now. And, you know, Francisco Lindor, I love. So, great season for the Mets. You know, I know you're a Yankee fan, but you got to admit, and usually by this point in June, you know, my faith in the Mets is kind of going down. But, you know, I'm almost afraid to say it, but I'm still hopeful. They're 20 games above 500. They've only dropped 10 at home. I gotta still hope, you know. You know, the classic Met line is you gotta believe, and frankly, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, they've, especially with how much they've had to, like, deal with in terms of injuries, especially in the pitching side, they perform really well. I mean, the fact that, you know, their longest losing streak has been 2. I mean, they've been consistent. They're still, like you said, 20 games over 500. One guy that I was looking out for, if he would, like, have a, like, bit of a bounce back, was Taijuan Walker, because he was really good to start out last season, and then he kind of tailed off. People were wondering, like, wait a minute, was he benefiting from some of the foreign substances, and when they took it away, he was kind of falling off. But, you know, he's bounced back pretty well, and so has, you know, most of the Mets, and they've been playing great so far.
Yeah, and you mentioned Taijuan Walker. I just pulled up his stats. This season he started 12 games, 6-2 record with a 3.03 ERA. That's respectable.
Yeah, it's pretty good, especially when, you know, when your top two guys get hurt, you're being put into a role that maybe you weren't expecting at first. So he's adjusted pretty well.
Yeah, Mets, you know, kind of leaning on him as, you know, an experienced pillar, you know, on this team. You know, David Peterson, Tyler McGill, both, you know, younger guys. So, you know, to have guys like Walker and Carrasco and Bassett, you know, kind of hold down on the rotation while you wait for Scherzer and DeGrom to come back, you know, you can't overestimate the value of that.
Yeah, I mean, especially even when these guys who are on the IL right now come back, you know, the guys who are filling in, they're prepared to keep playing well as they were, you know, when they had that elevated role. So it's when guys start to come back from being injured, it's kind of like it can be a win-win if, you know, the guys stick with their production.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if we want to switch over to the other New York team, the New York Yankees have been playing out of this world. Although the past few games have been a bit of, you know, there have been some signs for concern, but the Yankees, they just keep winning. I mean, last night they were down 5-1, and then they ripped off 8 straight runs. Started by, you know, it was 2 catcher's interferences, a walk, and a hit by pitch. Josh Donaldson rips a double down the left field line, and all of a sudden Yankees are in the league, and then they are in
the league.
2
catcher interferences in 1 inning.
Yeah, and especially since, you know, Sean Murphy is one of the better defensive catchers in the league too, so I don't think anyone expected that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
And then obviously Aaron Judge is having an MVP year, especially in a contract year. And I think the thing that's caught the most people off guard is how good the starting pitching's been. I mean, everyone expected Gerrit Cole to be very good, and outside of a few blips here and there, he's been that good. And then you got guys like Nestor Cortez Jr., Jameson Taillon, Jordan Montgomery. And, I mean, they've just been stepping up and pitching very well. And even the bullpen, I mean, they've had some injuries. You know, Jonathan Loaisiga out for a little bit. Aroldis Chapman out for a little bit, Chad Green out for the year, and you know they've had guys step up. Clay Holmes has become one of the most dominant relievers this year in the MLB. You got guys like Wandy Peralta coming up clutch. Even guys that come out of nowhere like Michael King and Clark Schmidt. You know they've gotten some really good production out of the bullpen.
I'm gonna prove your point by saying who?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean. They just, Matt Blake and his pitching staff, they just build production, and you know, it's been a revelation. Even though the Yankees offense is back to what people expected it to be, the pitching has been a wonderful surprise.
Yeah, and that's, you know, really, you know, it's pitching and defense that really, you know, you can have the greatest bats, but if you can't play defense, you know, you're not going to be able to win games. And you could say the same thing about the bats. You know, stellar defense, but no bats, you'll lose games too. Obviously, it's a, you know, very much a two-way street. But, you know, if you have a pitcher, especially when you have a starter who's kind of, you know, in the groove, you know, that can really spark a team. You know, granted, you could also have a team that just refuses to put up runs for one particular starter, like you had with the 2021 Mets and Jacob DeGrom.
Or Jordan Montgomery.
Yeah, exactly. But in theory, it should go the other way.
Yeah, that's always really weird. It always seems like one of those coincidental things. When yes. A guy just can't get run support. It's just so weird. I don't, like, obviously you don't hate the guy. It's just you get unlucky.
Yeah, you get unlucky. And I mean, you know, to put up, you know, a great offensive showing every game obviously isn't, you know, going to be possible, but it's so frustrating when it's always against the same, when it's not against, excuse me, when it's always, you know, with the same pitcher on the mound.
Yeah, I mean,
it gets frustrating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jordan Montgomery, I think there was a stretch last year where he had like the fewest the lowest run support in all of Major League Baseball. And even this year, that started to continue. I mean, he's getting no decision after no decision. Even last night, if he had just gotten that last out in the top of the seventh inning, he would have been in line for the win. But unfortunately, he couldn't get it, and then Albert Abreu got the win.
Yeah, but, you know, and you alluded to it, you know, having a good bullpen is also so critical. I mean, you know, the Mets have struggled with that in the past as well, where you have, you know, dominant starters, but the bullpen can't hold the lineup to save its life. You know, that's also, and you need a bullpen that can get you, you know, sometimes you just need the bullpen to get you, you know, 3, 4, 5, you know, 6 outs, and sometimes you need the bullpen to get you 10 or 12 outs, you know. You never know what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we're looking at the Mets and the Yankees, the Mets bullpen has been better than they've been the last few years. I mean,
oh, yes.
Edwin Diaz in particular has been great.
Love Diaz.
He's starting to shed the nickname that many people have had, Ed Luz Diaz. He's starting to shed that.
Yeah. I will say, I went to a Met game at the beginning of this month, and they brought in Edwin Diaz, and they play, you know, when they play his music,
the trumpets,
the whole stadium, and this was like a random, was it a Wednesday afternoon game? You know, the whole stadium just gets so into it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I can attest to that too. I actually went to the game where the Mets threw a combined no hitter against the Phillies.
Oh, wow.
It was a Friday night, and when Edwin Diaz was coming out of the bullpen and the trumpets were playing, it was electric because you could feel like we're this close to getting to, you know, no hitting our division rival.
Yeah,
it was a great environment.
It's quite a vibe. Like the first time I heard it when they first traded for Diaz a couple years ago, like I didn't fully like realize, you know, especially, I mean, that year Edwin Diaz kind of struggled a little bit. Now that, you know, the pandemic year really helped Edwin Diaz to kind of find himself again. Apologies to the listeners who are hearing a siren as an ambulance zips down College Avenue. But, you know, now that Edwin Diaz has gotten his groove back and, you know, as weird as it is to say, that pandemic year without the fans really helped him adjust to New York.
Yeah, I mean, he had 57 saves in 2018 with Seattle. So,
yeah, And so, you know, to get Edwin Diaz back to form has been essential for the Mets, and it has been a blessing for them now that they're able to really, you know that you just need to get 24 outs,
and then he'll do the rest.
And then he'll do the rest. Even, you know, maybe get 23 outs and he'll get the 4-out save, you know. Especially, and I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent. The Universal DH changes the strategy completely.
Definitely.
Because, you know, now you have that AL-type strategy, but in every game. And, I mean, you look at it, you know, you see games where you have no pinch hitters the entire game. You have your starting, you have your 8 fielders and your designated hitter, and you keep those 9 guys in the lineup the whole game. You know, the biggest cause of pinch hitting is the pitchers. And, you know, you take that out of the equation, and now you have guys on the bench, which, you know, games, long extra inning games are a slog because eventually they would run out of bats because, you know, you can't manage every game expecting it to go to extra innings. So, you know, sometimes teams would get to the 9th, 10th, 12th inning, and they'd have, you know, one guy left on the bench, and it's the backup catcher.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one game, I think it was in Miami when they were playing the Marlins, the Yankees had to put in Nestor Cortez as a pinch runner because they just had no guys left on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, the Mets, I don't remember when it was. This was a long time ago, before my time, but my father remembers it. The Mets one time needed to save their pitchers. So what they were doing was, they brought in a pitcher, they brought in a righty, and then when they needed the lefty, they pulled one of their outfielders, moved the pitcher to the outfield, and brought in the lefty. And then they had these two pitchers switching off. Like, so they had the pitcher, the two pitchers, and one outfielder just moving around based on who was batting.
Yeah, I remember the Phillies did that a couple years ago, too. They had their left fielder pitching because, you know, their closer was, I guess, obviously he was done pitching for the day, but they had, I think it was Vince Velasquez, they put him in left field, and I believe that game was in San Francisco, but I could be wrong. But yeah, they had to put Vince Velasquez, their closer, in left field, and had to have their left fielder pitch. And what ended up happening was Vince Velasquez made like a diving catch in left field to like save a run, and then the very next batter, I think it was a sack fly. He throws out the runner at home on an absolute laser. It was like one of the weirdest things I'd ever seen. The pitcher throwing guys out from left field. I mean, that's kind of like what you get in these wacky extra inning games.
I'm looking for it now.
And I mean, I know that I'm sure teams don't love it, but that's what I kind of miss about like the long extra inning games. That's kind of been like taken out with the universal runner.
Yeah, the extra runner.
Yeah,
that also has made.
Can I just comment real quick? I know I've been pretty silent on this baseball conversation, but the extra runner thing doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
No, it doesn't.
That's basically like making like overtime in a basketball game, like, you know, a 3-point shooting contest, and first one to make a 3 wins.
Doesn't the NHL at a certain point make overtime 3-on-3?
I can't comment on that, unfortunately.
I know they have shootouts.
Yeah, the NHL adopted a 3-on-3 overtime format ahead of the 2015-16 season. So,
interesting. I think the nature of baseball has a really tough problem when it comes to,
overtime, but in the playoffs, like, they don't
extra
do that.
Innings, because baseball games can go on for a long time.
Yeah, there's no
versus
clock.
Like a basketball game,
you can't run the clock out.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
and there's
for basketball, like, there's a lot of opportunities to score, as opposed to baseball, where like you could really like get into trouble, like only like maybe, you know what I'm talking about. Like, there has to be certain situations in order to score. You know what I mean? Like, a runner has to be on second base or something like that. So right. I could kind of see why baseball would do something like that. But at the same time, I think it kind of takes away from the essence of the game. Because at the same time, baseball
needs
to be like that.
Yeah, when a team wins the game, in the 12th inning, you know, it's so much more exciting, you know, when it's a walk-off home run versus a leadoff bloop single and the runner scored from second base.
Right. Right. It's all part of the effort for them to speed up the game, and that's kind of been baseball's thing recently. They're trying to appeal to younger audiences.
The pitch clock is coming soon.
That's the way they want to do it.
Yeah. Apparently, the pitch clock's been very effective in the minor leagues in speeding up games.
Like, yeah, it's shaved like 20 to 25 minutes off the average game length. Yeah.
Which is, I mean, a substantial amount.
Yeah, that's substantial, especially as, you know, the average MLB game length has gotten longer and longer.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, with all the replay reviews, that's kind of, you know, canceling out, kind of trying to shorten it up.
But the average game length over the last 10 years is just north of 3 hours. And there was a time when a baseball game would go 2.5 hours, and that was normal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, trying to speed up the game, I guess it can only do, it can do good, but sometimes it goes a little bit too far. Like, I don't really like the runner on second because it feels like you're cheapening extra innings, because all you need is like a bunt and a sac fly. Which, of course, is easier said than done, but there's a path to, you know, scoring a run easy.
It's kind of comparable,
especially when
to
you
the
sub in the faster runner.
Time.
Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of comparable. The 2-point conversion thing.
Yeah. No, it's kind of comparable to the college football overtime where they started on the 35. I know a lot of people are fans of the college football overtime, but I don't really like it because it puts, you know, defenses at a really tough disadvantage. And I know this is about college football, but, you know, there's realistic possibilities with the college football overtime that you could have like a game that's like 21-21 and then the game would end like at 64-61 or something.
Yeah.
Because of like how easy it is to score. Because
you're basically putting a team in field goal range every time they get the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, of course, there's some solutions like what the NCAA did this year, which led to Penn State and Illinois playing in 9 overtimes, only for them to score like 4 points total.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like, I think that was when people started realizing, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, back to the baseball extra inning rules. I mean, it feels like, at least in the years past, it felt just the 2 years past that it existed, it felt like it affected the Yankees, at least in my eyes, being a Yankees fan. It affected the Yankees a lot because they were never really that team to play like small ball, like move runners over, that kind of thing. So it always seemed like teams would do it better than them, which would, you know, I would get annoyed, like, man, why can't we do this?
Yeah. I mean, at that point, like you said, it becomes a game of small ball because you can still win it, you know, with the big swat and, you know, win it on a walk-off home run. But sometimes all you need is that single, and a fast enough runner can score from second.
Yeah.
And it's different, and, you know, I'll be honest, I don't love it. I don't love it, you know. Like, I think it was Jack said it earlier, just earn the run. You know, really earn it. And on that note, we're going to sign off tonight, and thank you so much for joining us. This has been the Tuesday Crew. Stay tuned for further programming here and further episodes of Crew throughout the summer. You're listening to Rutgers Radio, WRSU-FM, New Brunswick on 88.7 FM and online at WRSU.org.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Oh! I love this guy.
What's your name?